Hello and welcome to Adulting with Ebony, the podcast where each week I explore what it means to be a kick-ass and kind adult in our modern world. Expect strong language and viewpoints, as no topic is out of bounds here. My guests and I will navigate the complete spectrum from wildness to responsibility with compassion and curiosity rather than expectation. I'm Ebony Allard and I'm a misfit turned maven, an author, a coach and your host for Adulting with Ebony. Come on then, let's do this. Hello and welcome to this week's episode. Today I'm joined by Tammy Thomas, founder of 360 and purveyor of joy. 360 is a wellness brand on a mission to help Generation X women experience more joy in their day-to-day lives. Hello, Tammy.
Hello, Ebony. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for so much for coming and having this conversation with me. It's just, I love you.
Oh, thank you. It's reciprocal.
Yay! Just as a starter, we're going to cover so many different things, I'm sure. But what does adulting or being an adult mean for you?
Adulting to me means taking responsibility. I could go on for ages, but the correct way for me, or not the correct, but adulting feels for me like taking responsibility, whether that's taking responsibility for something that feels quite heavy and weighty, or taking responsibility for something that feels like I'm soaring in the sky. It is taking responsibility.
I love that so much. And I love that so much because my brain, when you say that, and you know, I've been doing these podcasts for a long time and having this conversation for a long time. And for me, I agree, it's very much about responsibility. But as soon as I hear someone say it, my brain is drawn to the heaviness. Mm-hmm. It's drawn to the like, oh, it's going to be hard. And there's like an attitude of I have to about mm-hmm. it. And yet at the same time, like as an adult, it's my responsibility. Like my joy is my responsibility.
Exactly. Exactly. And equally, with joy being your responsibility, it's also, I have found it quite difficult to take responsibility for my joy, because I think that we are brought up in a society that prepares us for fear but doesn't prepare us for joy. So sometimes I feel like it's not mine to claim, and sometimes I feel like I'm very privileged, or that it is something very frivolous. And it has taken me a good 3 years of practice, and I still struggle, but I'm more able to take responsibility for my joy and prioritize it.
I love that. And I get it. You know, I really get it. It's really easy to, so I talk about us playing, I've got a hard life, top trumps, and mm-hmm. it's that thing when you come back from work or you come in and you go, oh, and you know, something happened, and you share it with your partner or whoever's at home, and they go, yeah, you know, the essence of, yeah, that was nothing I did, or I had this situation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's really easy to play top trumps with our like hard luck, right?
Yep.
I want to change that up. I want us to be in a place where we come home and we one up each other for joy.
Finger snaps. That is where I'm at.
How do we make
wholehearted?
How? I'm so, like, a genuine question. I'm like, how do we shift a whole culture around joy?
I think that by taking responsibility for your own joy, you give other people permission to own their joy. And I have examples within my life. So I have a daughter who very much leans towards, she doesn't lean towards her own, let's say, low level vibration, but she's always running to the rescue of her friends. She's only 12, but already she's already taking up that role and then absorbing their stuff. And she, by looking at me, has realized that is something she's doing, and she actively seeks relationships and experiences that bring her joy. Then on the upper end of my scale, my mum, who could be quite expect the least, and then if you get more, it's a bonus, that kind of thinking, she, and I'm really busy, I've got all these things to do. She's got a business, she's got lots of staff that she's responsible for. So she thought that she couldn't take time out. She has been practicing yoga now for 2 years. She does weekly yoga lessons. And 2 months ago, she started piano lessons. And she shared that that was from seeing me prioritizing joy. And I don't go out spending loads of money to prioritize joy. I just am constantly seeking the joy in every moment, even the ones that feel quite sticky. And she has seen that. So that alone has given the younger people within my family and an older person within my family permission to also seek joy.
I love that. Congratulations. Well done. For me, that's the very essence of be the change that you seek in the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Where did the idea, or where did this ethos of being a purveyor of joy and making it a priority and seeking it out come from for you?
Well, it's only in the last month that I claimed the title of purveyor of joy, and it took me so long to press save when I changed my profile. And I have grown into appreciating and feeling my way into that title. And the concept came from really struggling after I turned 40, because life didn't look like the way I thought it should. I didn't do the things that I thought I needed to. And life spiraled very quickly, but round and round in a very small circle. I felt very, very claustrophobic and had a bit of an existential crisis. My background is social work. I love psychology. I love psychiatry. I love the quote unquote science of the mind. And I tried to science myself out. And that just felt like putting more and more boulders on top of myself. Mm. And then I went roller skating. I randomly took my daughter roller skating that week. And I was filling out a activity diary where you keep a log of the things that give you a sense of achievement, a sense of satisfaction. And there was another category, and during that week there was lots of achievement, but the only satisfaction was when I went roller skating, and the way I felt afterwards was unreal. And then I realized that if I put joy first, the rest of the stuff won't feel so cumbersome. And I read lots of stuff about joy and thought to myself, we've got it back to front. We think that this is a flippant add-on, but actually this should be our baseline. There's that should again. But if joy as my baseline serves me very well, because whether I go down because I'm feeling really stuck or whatever, low vibrational feeling, or whether I'm having a really heady high because I've had some kind of success, whatever that may mean at the time, I've always got that stable base of joy to come back to. And I think that I have been able to make changes in my life and my outlook and my relationships by prioritizing joy. But yeah, it did come out of crisis.
Sometimes when I'm working with clients at the beginning and I ask them to tell me what makes them happy, mm-hmm. they really, really struggle. And mm-hmm. so I've got two questions. The first one is, for you, is there any difference or is it just semantics between happiness and joy? And the second one is, did you have to work for it and like find out what brought you joy?
Yeah, there is a big difference for me between happiness and joy. Yeah. And just in the words, happiness for me is something that happens. Happiness for me is external, whereas joy lives within me all the time. So I haven't yet been able to be sad and happy simultaneously. But when I'm in a moment of sadness, I can find joy within that. I can find a lesson that gives me a sense of joy. Joy for me really feels like a grounding vibration, whereas happiness feels like a lifting.
I love it. I think it's really important to help people differentiate, because often you know, we're not a lot of us are really intuitive and have all of these feelings and haven't and perhaps at a young age
there wasn't someone around who appreciated it, or we weren't given the vocabulary, or we were told we felt too much, and or for whatever reason we shut it down. And now as adults we often find that we don't have the right words, or or it's a bit like looking at colors, and you know, I'm someone who can look at colors and I'll never just say it's blue. I'll go, you know, I'll pick out a particular shade of blue. And I think it's really important to find all of these different words, because we have so many different feelings.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that we're conditioned to think, oh my God, I'm so happy. Everything's so happy. It's so great. And for me, that can feel like toxic positivity. That can be quite oppressive. Whereas the idea that joy is within you and you can tap into it at any time just feels really empowering.
I recently had a weekend where life was all a bit too much, and I just needed to press the reset button. And so I took myself to my favourite place, which at the moment is my sofa. It's velvet, it's new, and I love it. And it's got all the cushions are made by designers that I adore. And like, I can know the process they went through to make it and all of that stuff. And I was lying there and I was kind of depressed, like kind of flat. But the joy I experienced in that moment, like I can't describe it as happy. I wasn't like lying on my sofa in a slump of happiness. But I felt such joy at the sensations on my skin, at the roof over my head, at the space and time and structures that I've got that allow me to take that time out and press the reset button.
I absolutely love that. Absolutely love that, because there is a really big difference. And like, coming back again to the semantics, in the dictionary, and this was so profound for me that I actually printed it out, and I've got it on a piece of paper. In the dictionary, it describes joy as a feeling of great pleasure and happiness. And I just thought, that doesn't feel like what I'm trying to communicate. And then I was Googling, and I'm sure that this was like some kind of Christian blog or something, but the person who wrote it is a guy called Bill High, and his description of joy is a state of mind and an orientation of the heart. It is a settled state of contentment, confidence, and hope. Now, when you're on your sofa having your moment of sadness, you can access a state of mind and an orientation of the heart, a settled state of contentment, confidence, and hope. Whereas happy, the like great pleasure, and I don't think you can feel that in moments where it feels quite tricky. I haven't yet, I should say.
No, and for me, that, like, for me, this is adulting, right? For me, creating space, creating containers for all of your feelings, not judging them, not missing them, you know. In fact, my best friend shared with me a quote again yesterday, and I'm probably going to get it wrong, but because I don't have the memory for these things, but it was about feeling the feelings but not becoming the emotion.
Yes.
And I have no idea who said it, I'm afraid, but it was so perfect for me. It was like, oh yes, I can, I'm creating this as an adult, I'm creating the space to feel my feelings, but I'm not becoming depressed, I'm not becoming sad or becoming anything. I'm just allowing it to be here for a bit.
Absolutely. The power of mindfulness, because when you look at it through that prism, you are able to observe your feelings and know that you're experiencing these feelings, but they are not you. So whether it is a feeling of, oh my goodness, this is so fantastic, I've just, I don't know, won the lottery, or it is the feeling of, oh my goodness, I have messed up and let somebody down, if you can take that moment to take a step backwards and observe that rather than absorb it, it just gives you the room to look for the lesson and apply it, and realize that judging yourself is not actually going to help with the situation. It's just feeding your ego.
So true, so wise. Do you know what,
it takes a lot of practice.
Oh yeah, well, exactly. And that's what I was kind of coming to, like, what I also love is that you work with Generation X women, because I think they're so, and I'm really not telling all the millennials listening to this that you need to go away. And I'm also not telling baby boomers that there's no space for you. And I'm also not labeling anyone in any way, but there's something special about Gen X. And you know, I have to say that because that's where I identify. And I see us as a bridge. Like, I really see us as a very special group of people who have got like one hand and one arm in, you know, the kind of baby boomer era and analog and, you know, rewinding videotapes with a pencil. But we also get the online world.
Yes, you're rewinding cassette tapes with pencils. And as you were speaking, I smiled because I describe us as the generation that had an analog childhood and a digital adulthood.
Yeah, it's true. I really agree with that. And I think we're quite special, but we've got a lot going on inside of us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's, I think that we're not necessarily, because we're a smaller generation in some ways, we're not always given a special place to go.
Agreed. Something I say quite often is no one's talking to us.
Yeah. So I'm in the middle of my second book at the moment.
Mm.
I've been saying that for a while. I realise I really need to finish it. Distracted. But I'm talking directly to us. And in the opening chapter, a quote from the film Clerks. And I also, you know, the whole way through, it's like, I'm not even supposed to be here today. And that attitude of like, I'm a kid or I'm a teenager. And like, it's not my fault and it's not up to me.
Mm-hmm.
We are the grown-ups now. We are the system and it is up to us.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And we can do it with joy.
100% yes. And that doesn't mean that we're bouncing around smiling like the Cheshire Cat every moment.
No, because I actually think we have a propensity for, maybe this is just my upbringing, but we have the propensity for kind of emo and goth more than any others. Like, we like that space, like we can stay in it. We've got the capacity for darkness and aren't as scared by it.
Yes, absolutely. We're comfortable there.
Yeah, we could go off on more about this forever. But if people want to come find out more about you and about 360 and the work that you're doing to help Generation X women, where is the best place for them to come and visit?
The best place to visit would be Instagram. I'm there as at Live360 and as a purveyor of joy and words. That is all alpha. So it's THREE 60, Live360. And also, if you hop on over to my website, which is www.live360.com, and sign up for my newsletter, you will receive my musings and discoveries on a weekly basis.
Fantastic. As usual, put all the links through that make it really easy for you to click, because, you know, clicking is so much easier than it ever used to
be. So much easier.
Tamu, I'm sorry that the internet squiffed us up in the middle, but it's been such a pleasure talking to you.
Absolutely, thank you.
Will you finish with an I'm an adult but with me?
Oh, okay.
I was reading your pause and being like, she hasn't got one, I'm gonna have to think of one really fast.
No. I am an adult. Oh, does it have to be a but or can it be an and?
It can be an and.
I am an adult and my playfulness is my strength.
Aha, love that. I am an adult, but I still very often don't feel like one. I very often feel like the kid from Clerks going, I shouldn't even be here today.
I can so relate, but I got to a point when I had to think about all the things that have got me into and out of things and all of the things that people say attract them to me, and it is my playfulness. So instead of thinking about my playfulness as being immature, I now consider it to be a vital part of my vitality.
Absolutely, it's your superpower. I totally get that. Yeah. Oh, right, I'm gonna let you go because otherwise we'll just do another whole 20 minutes. But if you are listening to this, wants me to get Tamu back, then message me and let me know and we'll do this again.
Yay.
This has been Adulting with Ebony. I have been Ebony. You have been great. Thank you so much for all of your support. Please keep listening, liking, rating, sharing so that more people can come and enjoy and engage with us. Really, thank you. I'll see you next time.